The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt, live on the West Coast. Good morning to you. The biggest story of the day are in two, but it's two-part story in two percentages. 7% inflation, 33% approval for Joe Biden. That's through the floor. That's falling off the floor and into the basement. That's crashing. That is free fall area. Quinnipiac poll shows Joe Biden with a 33% approval rating. Don't believe me. It's in the actual Quinnipiac press release. Americans give Joe Biden a negative 33 to 53% job rating, approval rating, while 13% did not offer an opinion. Among Democrats, 75% approve. That's it. He's down to three out of four Democrats. Among Democrats in November, it was 87%. It's wild. Why is he falling like a rock after 1 year? Well, U.S. inflation soaring to 7% for the first time since 1982, according to the Financial Times. The Wall Street Journal did a great story. Why 7% inflation today is far different than in 1982. Short answer, in 1982, inflation was falling from the Jimmy Carter era high of 13.5%. down to 7%. This time it's rising, and it's going to keep rising. Why? Because oil rally continues, as Reuters reports this morning. They are going in some notions, in the limited parts of the oil market, to $90 or even $100 a barrel because of the spot market shortages occasioned by Omicron spread. How bad can it get in Turkey? Erdogan, the dictator, has vowed to tame Turkish inflation, which was 36% last month. Meanwhile, what do you do if you're the Democrats and you're stuck with a president who is sinking far lower than Donald Trump ever got? You divert, you distract, and that's what Chuck Schumer did yesterday, laying out a joke plan for votes on his election bill and to break the filibuster. They're using some gimmick to get around the standard operating procedure, but you still got to go through a filibuster. It's still not going to pass. Joe Manchin's still not going to change his vote. Neither is Kyrsten Sinema. But we'll find out whether or not Mark Kelly of Arizona and Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire and Senator Bennett of Colorado want to trash the institution. The Washington Post says Schumer sets up final Senate confrontation on voting rights in the filibuster. That's like saying Cornwallis sets up final confrontation with Washington on Yorktown. We know how this one's going to turn out. Post also opines in a headline, Democrats worry Biden could pay the political price for rising inflation. You think? You think they're going to? The red wave is coming and Biden's surfboard is broken. Another diversion, the January 6th Rump Committee seeks an interview with Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy told him to pound sand last night. Now, had it been a real committee, had there been a select committee and Nancy Pelosi had named whoever's on it, I don't even know who's on it other than Liz Cheney and the guy from Chicago whose name I can't remember, and those are the two Republicans Pelosi put on. Had she actually formed a real select committee and McCarthy had been allowed to appoint the Republicans, Jim Banks is the ranking minority, they would hire their own counsel, there would be some weight to this committee's proceedings. There isn't any because it's a rump committee, like the rump parliaments that have occasionally existed in British world. By the way, last just little interesting story for you Dartmouth College alum out there. Dartmouth College is going to remove financial barriers for low-income foreign applicants. They will now be providing complete annual tuition and accommodation fees of $80,000 per foreign student that they judge need blind. Now, I don't know who gives money to Dartmouth. I certainly don't. I don't know if they're a degree-granting institution, actually. That's for you, Hinderacker and Johnson up in Powerline land in Minnesota. But, you know, and Goodspeed and Bumstead and all my buddies from law school. Dartmouth is going to give full scholarships from their endowment to foreign students of low income mean, saying talent is worldwide. Well, talent is certainly worldwide, but I don't think people who donated to the endowment intended it for that purpose. I really don't. I'm not sure. It's not my school, not my problem. Boris Johnson's career of rule-breaking runs into a crisis, according to The Economist. The Telegraph says Rishi Sunak, who is their Chancellor of the Exchequer, the smart young guy, the 41-year-old, didn't show up in Commons yesterday to support the boss. The Tories will be buried if they ignore the real lessons behind Boris's fall, Alistair Heath of The Telegraph writes. Tory benches packed out for blood sport as Boris Johnson reaches new heights of cringe, according to Madeline Grant in The Telegraph. Boris Johnson is toast if Susan Gray comes back and says anything other than he's completely innocent, and that's not going to happen. Then conflicting signals out of the talks in Vienna about Iran, the terrorist state nuclear weaponry. Expectations grow for a deal to emerge from Iran nuclear talks, and White House focusing blame on reckless Trump ahead of Iran nuclear decision. There's also a story on how a Beltway naval breakfast sparked China's ire over Taiwan, and the U.S. Navy cutting ties with a nonprofit military association of naval attachés because China wanted them to. Not a good look. The destroyer Preble is going to get Lockheed High Energy Laser in 2022. That's good news. The Purple Line in Maryland is going to open 4.5 years late and cost $1.4 billion more to complete. I just tell you this because that's part of the Washington area metro system. The Purple Line goes to Maryland, so it's cost twice as much. Well, not quite twice. It was supposed to cost $5.6 billion, and it's coming in at $9.3 billion. And it's 4.5 years behind schedule. So if we extrapolate from this to the infrastructure bill passed last year, the bipartisan infrastructure bill for $1.2 trillion, that will actually buy about $600 to $700 million of infrastructure that will be delivered well after 4.5 years after it's supposed to come in. That's the problem with infrastructure bills. Look, I also have a question. 1-800-520-1234. That's the news of the day. That's the rundown. Last night I had one of those weird COVID dreams. And you know what I'm talking about. Dreams that I have a theory, but I want to know what psychiatrists or psychologists think about this theory. Now, I had lunch with Kurt Schlichter yesterday. So that might explain why I'm, off the rails a little bit. And I had an email exchange with my law school roommate, Tim Butler, a couple of days ago. And I had dinner with a law partner two nights ago, and we were talking about his daughter who's in law school, and we were talking about our respective law school experience. And I went to University of Michigan Law School from 1980 to 1983. I had a grand old time, did very well, had a wonderful legal career. I retired 4 years ago, whenever I took the morning drive, 5 years ago. But last night I had an extended dream. Now I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm on the West Coast. So this would have been go to bed at 8, get up at 2, 6 hours of sleep. It went on forever. It was full of law school people, Jim Greenberger and Mark Ferguson, who I have not seen or talked to. I haven't seen Greens in 20 years, maybe 10. I saw Greens when my daughter was in college in Chicago. I haven't seen Fergie in a long time. These are very good friends in law school years. And I was driving them back, and I was visiting in Chicago, where I haven't been in a long time since my daughter was in college. It's been 10 years. And I was driving them back and forth to work because they needed a lift. And then we found Mike Epps, this guy I haven't talked to in 40 years. And Epps was running a secondhand furniture store. And this ends up with Green swimming in the Chicago River. And I called Tim Butler in the dream and said, get Ann Gust, who is also in our law. She was first lady of California for a long time. Good friend. Get Ann Gust and come to Chicago. We're having a good time. Now, you tell me. You dream people out there, what in the world is that? I had not talked to Ferguson or Greens or Mike. I haven't thought about them in years. I mean, they're all good guys. They're friends. I'm not angry at them. And the Chicago River and Greens has got to get out of the river. But, I know why Butler's there and talking about law school. But my theory of COVID dreams is we're not taking in enough new information and experience. And all I do is take in new data, but not any new emotional experiences. You're kind of in an endless cycle of the same people, and you're not traveling and doing stuff that you want. And therefore, your psyche during the evening is obliged to go deeper and dredge up older memories. And the memories of law school are all pretty good. A lot of ouzo involved, but it was all pretty good. But someone fill me in. Send me an email, will you? What's my email address, Generalissimo? Is it Hugh@HughHewitt.com? I think it's Hugh@HughHewitt.com. Yeah, that's what. I'm not going to give you my real email address, but Hugh@HughHewitt.com. Come right back, America. Markets are crazy. Things are fun. It's a wild Thursday morning on the Hugh Hewitt Show, live from California. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, former deputy minister of Israel. Oh, the phone just dropped on us. That's too bad. That happens occasionally when we talk with people in Israel because the connection just don't work sometimes. Dr. Oren, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Hugh. How are you?
I'm great. I have two different stories coming out of Vienna. One is from The Economist, expectations grow for a deal to emerge from the Iran nuclear talk. The other, White House focusing blame on reckless
surprise,
Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. White House, though, is blaming Trump. And I got to play this for you. Blaming Trump for Iran behavior. Can we play Michael Oren cut number 32?
Most importantly, none of the things we're looking at now, Iran's increased capability and capacity, their aggressive actions that they have taken through proxy wars around the world would be happening if the former president had not recklessly pulled out of the nuclear deal with no thought as to what might come next.
Michael Oren, does Iran's behavior depend upon the old JCPOA having been broken?
I just want to say this, that if the previous president had said such a thing like that, 90% of the American press would be coming out and, you know, fact-checking him and calling him a liar. That's just a bold-faced lie. Iran has been the world's leading sponsor of state terror for more than a generation. It has sponsored terrorist attacks around the world. It's responsible for the deaths of thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of people, well, even before the JCPOA was signed. I don't know, you know, what universe that kind of remark comes out of, but it's just a lie. It's a falsehood.
Well, I know that. I don't understand what's going on in Vienna. What is your take on what's going on there?
I think they're going to reach an agreement. And I think that the agreement's going to be, you know, however they might dress it up, it's going to be actually less good than the previous agreement. And there was a leak, a White House leak, that appeared in the Israeli press about 48 hours ago that said that in order to defend the new agreement, the White House was going to put all of the blame on the previous president. And that's what's just going now with this remark by Psaki. It's rather, what can I say, rather ham-handed. I mean, you don't have to lie like that. But
you know, Deputy Secretary Sherman is in charge, and her nickname is Wendy, what do you want now, Sherman? And that goes back to every negotiation she's ever done. I'm surprised she doesn't walk out in a barrel when she's done of every negotiation. Michael, I got to ask you a different subject. I know what the Jewish agency is. I know you are rumored to be one of the candidates to run the Jewish agency, which would be smart because you actually talk to people like me on shows like this about things that matter to Israel and to the Jewish diaspora. But would you explain to people what the Jewish agency is and why there hasn't been a new head of it since the last head of it became president of Israel?
We may need a couple of hours for this, Hugh.
You got 2 minutes, but it's a wild story.
It's a wild story, and not a very happy one, alas. It's the largest Jewish philanthropy in the world. It has a budget of about $1.5 billion. It runs programs in Israel and around the world about Jewish education, Aliyah, immigration to Israel. It actually does programs for development of the Arab sector in Israel. I mean, if you go on Wikipedia, you'll see the dozens and dozens of programs that the Jewish agency funds and runs. It is the only organization that really links Israel to the diaspora, the Jews living around the world. There's a chairman. The previous chairman is now the president of Israel, Bushi Herzog. He left last spring. And since then, the committee that is charged with replacing that chairman has been unable to reach an agreement who would replace him. And yes, I am, you know, one of the leading candidates. I like to think I am the leading candidate. On that committee that makes the choice, there are 10 members. 9 have to agree. There are right-wingers and left-wingers, religious people, secular people, people from Israel, people from the United States and around the world, and they have not been able to reach an agreement.
See, I do not understand why you would put forward political people for this job. Sharansky held this job, didn't he?
He did. But Herzog had been the head of the Labor Party, and both Bougie, we call him Bougie, and Nathan Sharansky succeeded in elevating that position above politics. Now it's really been dragged back into politics quite, I think, tragically, too, because at the time we really need the Jewish agency.
Is it hemorrhaging credibility and the opportunity to raise money? I mean, there's a lot of money going into philanthropy right now. I am amazed that the Jewish Agency isn't focused on the outflow from people like America's billionaires and trying to net some of it.
Well, this simply, what's happened here, I think, has been very damaging to the Jewish Agency's reputation. I mean, remember, it had been enhanced previously. And there are many calls in the state of Israel saying, what do we need this for? The same, the government of Israel, the democratically elected government of Israel, could do this just as well, probably even better. Why do we need this? This is an organization that in pre-state Israel was a de facto government. Ben-Gurion, the founder of our country, had been the chairman of the Jewish Agency. It was founded in 1929, and many people here think it's outlived its purpose. I don't, but I know that this process dragging on, and it now looks like it's going to drag on indefinitely, has been really deleterious.
It doesn't the new prime minister realize that reflects poorly on him?
I would like to think so. I can't guarantee. He has not taken a position strongly. His previous candidate was, what can I say, he was Me Too'd.
Well, I'll just tell you, I know what the Jewish Agency is. I'm not Jewish. I think it is necessary, and I can't believe any organization goes 8 months without a leader. That's just really criminal. Michael Oren, great to talk to you. Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter, Dr. Michael Oren. The Iran deal, Jen Psaki, that's just a bold-faced lie. Thank you, Dr. Oren. I appreciate your clarity. As always, don't go anywhere, America. Hour 2 of the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, live from California, rolls on. Morning, glory, America. Bombs roar high. Canada live from California. I'm Hugh Hewitt, out on the West Coast for a few weeks, as is my want during the early winter months. I like to come out and broadcast from here, even though it's early here. Also want to welcome to the Hugh Hewitt family 920 and 99.1 KXGX in Palm Springs, covering the Coachella Valley like nobody else. I've been on the radio for 30 years. I've never been on live in Palm Springs and La Quinta and Indian Wells and Rancho Mirage. I'm so glad to add that. Your next congressman is a guy named Ken Calvert, longtime friend of mine. He's been in Congress for 15 terms. Their redistricting is going on, and I think Ken Calvert is going to represent the desert next. Am I right about that, Congressman Ken Calvert?
Yes, that's exactly right. Good to talk to you this morning. I wish I was in California where the weather's great. Not so great here.
It's wonderful here. Say hello to your new constituents or constituents-to-be in the desert. We already cover the Inland Empire on 590, but we are very happy to add Palm Springs and the other cities in the desert, and you will do a great job representing them.
I love the Coachella Valley. I'm looking forward to representing them and meeting all the folks down there. In fact, I'll be down there tomorrow.
Now, Congressman, you have long been a member of California, representing the Inland Empire, the California delegation. What did you make of the redistricting maps, our so-called independent commission? I say our because even though I'm a Virginian, I still have great ties to where I lived for 30 years.
Well, obviously, that independent commission wasn't independent. It obviously had their fingers on the scale for our friends on the other side of the aisle, and they pretty much strengthened all the Democratic seats and weaken the number of our seats, and thinking that they're going to be able to pick up additional seats. But that's not going to happen. Mike Garcia is a great candidate, even though they made his district a D plus 13. David Valadao is a D plus 14. Those are great candidates, and we're going to win those seats. Obviously, they dropped my registration down from an R8 to about an R2. But again, the Hispanic vote in the Coachella Valley and throughout Riverside County is conservative. I've worked with those communities for a long time, and we're going to carry that district very well. But it's making it more difficult for us, but we'll prevail.
One of the reasons I am so eager for your new constituents to learn about you is because you are the ranking minority member on the House Committee of Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense. And someday you're going to be chair of appropriations as well. All my friends who I have on regularly from the Defense Committee, Gallagher, Waltz, good guys. They're all terrific. And they have great plans and they give great instructions. But nothing gets done until the appropriators fund it. That means our Navy especially, which released just yesterday the announcement of a new destroyer that is vital to America's defense to go with the new frigate. That doesn't get done unless you get money out of your committee. So are you planning on upping the Navy top line when you get over to chair the Defense Subcommittee of Appropriations?
Absolutely. We need to stay on track to at least to get to 355 ships. As you know, we're down to around 290 ships now, and that depends on how you do the math. And the Chinese, of course, are way above us in memberships throughout the world. That's not good. We're going to have to get our ships on order now and try to catch up a little bit.
Now, this new DDGX warship, I love that they come up with new concepts, Congressman, but you've seen for a long time, weapon systems get authorized, a lot of money gets spent, and then they get killed because they don't get built on time. What are you going to do to assure that these destroyers, and especially the frigates rolling off the line up in Wisconsin, Gallagher's district, actually make it to sea?
Well, as a matter of fact, I had a conversation with the Chief of Naval Operations about that the other day. You know, we have this Zumwalt destroyer that we had a lot of hope for, and then it ends up obviously costing more than we thought, and then the gun doesn't work. So we can't have those kinds of mistakes. We can't afford it. We got to make these make sure that we get the ships done properly on paper, then build them on time and on budget. And we can't afford to go through these exercises anymore.
I saw the littoral combat ship. They put out a request for proposals on how to repurpose it last week. Right. They actually don't know what to do with the ships that we built the last time around. Now, Democrats are in charge of the committee. I don't know if they're fully funding the Navy, but the real hard choice, I don't want to put you in hot water here. There's some Marines out in the desert. I don't know. Do you get 29 Palms in the new district, or does that go to the other district?
No, but it bumps up against the 29 Palms.
Okay, so you'll get some Marines living in your area, and you'll get a lot of retired Marines like Jack Brennan living in your area. But the Marines are going to like this, but the Army's not going to like what I'm about to say, and the Air Force might not like it. We have to downsize old big Army and upsize Navy and Marine Corps. And is the Congress up to that fight?
As you know, we have a new commandant, and he has big plans for the Marine Corps. He wants to modernize the Corps, make it faster, make it more effective, especially in the South Pacific. I think we are up for that fight. I know that my colleagues on our committee and on the authorizing committee understands the threat, and the Marine Corps is going to be on the leading edge of that. And so we need to make sure the Corps is strengthened and that they can get to the fight. They need ships to do that, and we need to make sure they have those ships in the South Pacific.
I hope that means yes. I think that means yes. Now, let me ask you, Congressman, about internal Republican politics. You're one of the few bridge congresspeople, meaning that you're very friendly with the former President Trump. You're very friendly with Leader McCarthy. You bridge the party. You've been doing this a long time. You're a pro. How is the caucus? There's stress because of this January 6th rump committee. And Liz Cheney's my friend, and I like Liz a lot. But there's a lot of stress and a lot of attention in an attempt to divide the party. What's your take on all this?
Well, yeah, we have some tension in the party, but we're going to come together. Obviously, this January 6th commission is a witch hunt, and it's not serving any purpose other than political purposes for the Democratic Party. And it's putting the Kevin in a difficult situation, but he's handling it correct, he's not going to participate in this. I think all of our members are behind Kevin. There's a few outliers, but it's very few.
You will see the leader before I do, but I hope you tell Leader McCarthy, please do not appear before that committee. It does injury to the Constitution to allow the majority to select the minority's members and to deny the minority representation, their own staff, their own subpoena power. It does great damage to the idea of a select committee. This is not a select committee. It's a rump committee. And he should not have anything to do with it, nor should Jim Jordan, nor should anyone. Is that the prevailing view within the caucus?
Yes. Virtually 99% of us.
Has that ever happened before that a select committee was a rump committee selected by one party?
Not that I've ever heard of. I mean, that's ridiculous. And we're not going to participate in it.
All right. Now, there's a maneuver going on in the Congress today where Nancy Pelosi is going to take some Parks bill or something, strip out all the language, send it over so that Chuck Schumer can make a run at federalizing election law and doing away with voter security. Does that have a prayer?
Well, as long as Brother Manchin and Sinema stick with us, and I think they will, they've said so many times that, you know, that it'd be pretty crazy for them to walk away from the filibuster now. You're right, this shell is going over there for them to fill up this so-called election integrity bill, which is ridiculous, and we need to make sure that stops, and I think it will. I have faith that Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema will do the right thing and keep the filibuster.
Let me wrap up, Ken Calvert, because we got to get our new friends in the desert to know where to find you. What's the website for the campaign? Not for the congressional website, but for the campaign.
CalvertForCongress.com. Pull it up.
I love that. That's not complicated. CalvertForCongress.com. Ken Calvert, keep coming back. We got to educate the desert about what an asset they have in the ranking minority of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, soon to be the chairman of that come January of next year. Good to always talk to you, Congressman.
Well, thank you, Hugh. Have a great day.
You too. Ken Calvert's really one of our smart guys. He works it's the inside game. All right. It's not the outside game. The outside game is for people who communicate about big issues and sweeping things, can make sure that the money gets to the Navy. And that's what we need to have happen. I want you to hear Ted Cruz yesterday at a Senate presser talking about what's going on in the Senate. Cut number 31.
On the question of hypocrisy, you just asked. You people at the podium are speaking without masks. Just once, I'd like to see a reporter say to Joe Biden, when he stands at the damn podium in the White House without a mask, Mr. President, why aren't you wearing a mask? Just once, I'd like to see you say to Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, when she stands at the podium with no mask, Ms. Psaki, why don't you have a mask? The questions are only directed at one side, and I got to say, the American people see the hypocrisy.
Yeah, you know why I love that is because he's pounding the table. When I do that, Dwayne yells at me in my ear.
Yes, Ted, I do, don't
well,
I?
Did you hear Ted there pounding the table to make a point?
Yeah.
So there you go.
And you know what? Ted wasn't on 400 stations.
Well, that's true. That's true. But he has won a whole bunch of Supreme Court arguments. I don't know if he pounded the podium. I just wanted to point out that senators pound the podium, and so do radio talk show hosts pound the podium. And when their producers yell at them in their ears, I want you to know that they are going against the Cruz precedent. I'm now going to cite the Cruz precedent. When I come back, Marco Rubio on the Senate floor yesterday. Boy, did that presidential speech, Joe Biden at 33% and sinking. After the Atlanta speech, he's going to go down to, I don't know if he can break the 30. He might. People really think he's the worst president in history. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America Hewlett, live on the West Coast. Jim Talent is a member of the Bipartisan Policy Center, former senator from Missouri. He knows very well the importance of the filibuster. Senator, I've been playing this morning Leader McConnell's speech yesterday, Senator Cotton's speech, which cribbed all of his notes from Chuck Schumer's speech, Marco Rubio's speech. They are angry with Joe Biden's descent into madness in Atlanta the other day. That was just a crazy rant. That's what Mitch McConnell called it, a rant. Were you surprised by your former Senate colleagues' attack on the Senate?
No, not at all. But look, it's a target-rich environment for them. First place, they're legitimately and sincerely angry to be accused and compared to some of the worst figures, you know, going back in American history by a sitting, as Mitch said, by a sitting president of the United States. I mean, it's just highly irresponsible, and it's a set piece speech. I mean, it's not like he said it off the cuff because he was angry, right? You can forgive that. So there's that. But the other thing is, I mean, this is flailing around that is simply going to make the Democrat situation worse. So they're reacting in a way that is heightening the political damage to their political opponents, which makes sense.
Yeah,
please go ahead.
The Quinnipiac poll yesterday put Joe Biden's approval rating at 33%, 4 points lower than Donald Trump ever got. He's heading into Nixon at resignation land, and I know those numbers well because I used to run the Nixon Library. And I don't think he helped himself. Do you, Jim Talent?
No, absolutely not. Look, if I wanted to infer a politically rational motive, which I'm not sure I should do because I'm not sure they're acting rationally at this stage, I would say they're looking at numbers and they're losing parts of their own base, their own voters. And so they're trying to motivate. Their own voters are demotivated, so they're trying to motivate them by going out and waving these, you know, bloody shirts all over the place. Now, the problem with that, and the reason why that's not going to work and will make it worse, among other things, is that they're going to fail, right?
Yep.
This is not going to work. And it's an ironclad rule of American politics. Go back and rewatch George C. Scott's speech at the beginning of Patton. He says, Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser.
The other thing that I think is amazing politically, the Wall Street Journal today points out that the last time inflation was at 7% was 1982. The Republicans got crushed in 1982, crushed in the first off-year election after President Reagan's astonishing win in 1980. Jimmy Carter lost because of inflation. Ronald Reagan lost because of interest rates and inflation. His House numbers got decimated. Of course, he wasn't on the ballot in 82. I think the pictures of empty shelves in America are the most damning thing I've seen in a long time, Jim Talent.
You actually think that maybe inflation is a political problem? Yeah. And crime and the fact that the schools are closed. These things are affecting people day to day. There's a constant tendency in Washington, and this happens with pundits and consultants on both sides of the aisle, to underestimate the American people, okay? So they are, you know, look, they don't know the names necessarily of provinces in Afghanistan, but they know and understand issues that are affecting them day to day. And at least you should be talking about those issues. At least you should be trying to do something about them. That would make potentially some kind of a difference for them politically. I think this is, at best, incredibly tone deaf, even to deal with these issues in this fashion, but then to talk about it in this feverish way.
It's not partisan, it's incendiary, and it's slanderous. It's slanderous to call people Bull Condor.
It absolutely is. And it's very bad politically. So
okay, I got to ask you a quick substantive question. Navy released news that they're looking for a new destroyer, and I hope they build them fast. I asked Ken Calvert, who's ranking member on Defense Appropriations, if they will fully fund this. And he sort of indicated in a congressional kind of way, they've got to break the one-third deal. They've just got to put more money in the Navy. Do you see that happening when the Republicans take over the House?
Well, I think it's quite possible. I listened to that, by the way. Ken Calvert was a classmate of mine.
Oh, really?
It dates us both in 1992. Yeah, if we can't get the top line up. But we're in the middle of a crisis in Eastern Europe, which is an army theater, okay? And, you know, we could put paid to Putin's and what he's trying to do if we could increase our troop presence in Eastern Europe, but we can't do it because we don't have the men. If we have to, yes, I want to fund the Navy ahead of the land forces. But the answer is to increase the top line so that we can have an army that allows us to put another four or five brigades along with other NATO forces in Eastern Europe. And that would put paid to Putin's ambitions in the Baltics and in other places. Now, we wouldn't use those to defend Ukraine, but that's a response that would cause Putin to say, oops.
You know, I'll talk with John Cornyn about that, your other friend from the old days in the Senate, next hour. Senator Cornyn is joining me, and I know he's thinking a lot about Ukraine. That's why we're talking this morning. So I'll follow up on that next hour. Senator Jim Talent, always a pleasure. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Bang, 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 bang.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator John Cornyn of the great state of Texas, also a former member of the state Supreme Court in Texas. Good morning, Senator Cornyn.
Good morning, Hugh.
Yesterday, Leader McConnell, Senator Cotton, many of your colleagues took to the floor, and they were angry because President Biden had called you and every other Republican and Joe Manchin, I think, Bull Connor, George Wallace, and Jeff Davis. What was your reaction to the president's speech?
Well, it was embarrassing, and I was embarrassed for the president. It obviously is a sign of desperation when your poll numbers in the Quinnipiac poll now are at 33% and trending downward. This is a stark contrast from the January 20th Joe Biden and what he promised us in terms of healing and unifying our nation. This is the most divisive, demagogic speech I have heard in a long time, and it came from the President of the United States. It's embarrassing.
Former President Trump was often accused, endlessly accused, actually, on some legacy networks of using harsh language, which he did. I've never heard anything as harsh as calling someone Bull Connor. And everyone in the country who believes in voter security and amending laws to require ID and do away with ballot drop boxes and things like that, minor but important changes, is now Bull Connor, who is really a despicable figure.
Well, it's, and what makes it worse, you, is this is in service of a false narrative, as you point out. Senator Schumer was holding a chart that I used on the Senate floor, which was a result of a Pew poll taken November the 20th, 2020, where 94% of the respondents said they found it easy or very easy to vote. And then I challenged him to say what changes that have been made by this various states is he complaining about? And he mentioned the prohibition against ballot harvesting, which, as you know, is a system where some states allow people to go into nursing homes and, among other vulnerable populations, help them fill out their ballot, and then that political operative drops them in some drop box. And obviously many states feel like that's a recipe for mischief. But things like eliminating voter ID and forcing people like you and me to finance through our tax dollars candidates that we vehemently disagree with. I mean, this was a false narrative in service of a of really trying to sell something that is completely at odds with what they are talking about and what the president talked about in Atlanta.
Senator Cornyn, I can't agree more. And in fact, it flies in the face of the experience that ordinary Americans have. It's very easy to vote in America. I voted a month early in Virginia and walked right in, sat right down, voted. Everyone knows it's easy to vote. And so it doesn't persuade. A quick question. I got two quick questions. I got to get to the Ukraine. First of all, will the attempt to shatter the filibuster and thus the traditions of the Senate fail when it occurs?
It will fail, and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden knows it will fail. But here again, they are afraid of their progressive radical base, and they feel like they have to do this in order to show them that they, quote, tried, close quote, even though they know that Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and perhaps other Democrats understand that what goes around comes around in the Senate. Then if they do this now, that they will rue the day in the future when Republicans are in the majority.
I agree with that. Now, gerrymandering was the subject of an Ohio Supreme Court decision yesterday. By a vote of 4-3, they struck down the Ohio legislature's map for the Ohio State Senate and Ohio State Assembly. No word yet on the congressional maps. You have served as a state Supreme Court justice. We ought to get to the bottom. I hope the Supreme Court takes up what Pennsylvania did with its maps, what Ohio has now done with its maps, because if state Supreme Courts are going to politicize gerrymandering, they better damn well politicize Illinois' map, which is the most gerrymandered map in the United States, because New York has not yet brought its in, and California's was also a partisan hack job under the guise of an independent commission. Why is it that only Republican maps lose at state Supreme Courts, Senator Cornyn?
Well, unfortunately, the courts have become politicized as well, and particularly where people, state candidates run for election under a partisan label, and they make no pretense at being impartial judges, and unfortunately, that's a consequence of that. But as you know, Hugh, this was a strategy to try to insulate the state Supreme Court's decision from U.S. Supreme Court review. I hope the Supreme Court of the United States won't let them get away with it, because this is bigger than just one state's map. This has to do with honoring the decisions made by the elected representatives of the people, which is admittedly one of the most political things that legislatures do, which is to draw their maps. But this is not something for the courts to intervene on. They don't have the competence, and they aren't accountable to the people like the legislators are for the way they draw their maps. So I hope the Supreme Court takes up these cases where the state Supreme Courts try to insulate review by deciding it on independent state grounds.
Under the old court, an attempt to challenge the Pennsylvania Supreme Court revision of the Pennsylvania maps after the last sentence census failed. I'm hoping the new court notices that when North Carolina and Ohio strike down maps and Illinois and New York and California don't, that we have a partisan state court system and they intervene to preserve, as you said, the right of legislators to legislate. Now, Senator, I originally set this up to talk to you about Ukraine.
Yep.
Because I don't think we are doing enough. And I know you are spending a lot of time dialed in on Ukraine. What should we be doing to deter Putin now?
Well, we should be providing the Ukrainians everything they need in order to defend themselves and deter Russian aggression. One of the things what we're looking at right now, Hugh, is the old Lend-Lease program that was used back in World War II, where the United States provided surplus ships, airframes, weapons, and the like to Britain at a time when Britain was hanging on by a thread. And at the time, the FDR and the administration, using the Lend-Lease Act, provided $30 billion worth of equipment to other countries, including Britain. That would translate into $430 billion today. So this was a Herculean effort. But nobody's talking about committing U.S. troops in Ukraine. But what we ought to do is to do everything within our capacity, be that arsenal of democracy that FDR talked about in World War II, to provide the Ukrainians everything they need to deter and, if necessary, to defeat this aggression by Putin.
Senator Cornyn, that is a terrific idea. I remember that wonderful Herman Wouk novel, Winds of War. A lot of it is Pug Henry getting Lend-Lease going all over the world when the United States was not yet into the fight because it was pre-Pearl Harbor. Did that stay on the books, or do you have to reauthorize a version of it to be able to airlift supplies in that kind of quantity and with that kind of speed?
Well, a lot of this is actually codifying authorities that the president really already has, but it would serve two purposes. One, we would streamline the old program, which tended to be fairly bureaucratic. And secondly, I think it sends an independent message to Putin that the United States Congress is on board when it comes to providing the Ukrainians what they need to deter or defeat Russian aggression. I think what I'm concerned about is the administration is being fairly timid in talking about using sanctions, which I don't believe will work against Vladimir Putin. He doesn't care about sanctions. We've been imposing sanctions after sanctions over the last few years, and he keeps on coming. This is about his dream of restoration of the Russian Empire, the old Soviet Union, which he called the dissolution of which he called one of the biggest tragedies in world history. So we know what he's doing. We just need to provide the Ukrainians the ability to stop them, if possible, and certainly send a message that we are united with our NATO allies and other freedom-loving countries around the world to defeat that aggression by Vladimir Putin.
Now, Deputy Secretary Sherman of State gave a good speech before NATO yesterday, but her nickname on this show is Deputy Secretary Sherman. What more do you want from the United States? Because that's her middle name. And she gave away everything in 1994. She gave away everything to the Iranians in the JCPOA. I don't believe she is an effective negotiator. Does she have you alarmed that she is over there leading the negotiations with the Russians?
Well, I share your concern. And I share, you know, Putin is very perceptive. He's no dummy, and he sees an opportunity here, and he's going to pounce on it, just like the Iranians see an opportunity to negotiate the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, to allow them a pathway to nuclear weapons. So our adversaries recognize weakness, and as Donald Rumsfeld has famously said, that weakness is provocative, and that's a threat to stability, that's a threat to peace, and that's why we need to be strong. As Ronald Reagan famously said, peace through strength is the formula, and we need to show some strength here in the face of this aggression and these threats.
It's also no coincidence that Deputy Secretary Wendy, what do you want from the United States next? Sherman is also leading the Iranian negotiations, about which there's a rumored, quote, breakthrough, which will actually be a breakout capacity for Iran. Senator Cornyn, in terms of American troops, I want to emphasize, no one is talking about sending American troops to Ukraine. Your old friend and colleague in the Senate, Jim Talent, last hour said we ought to have 5 brigades of American troops in NATO countries like Poland and the Baltics. We don't have the money. We don't have the force structure. Do you agree with him that we've got to up our actual commitment of troops to NATO countries, not Ukraine, but the NATO countries?
Well, this is all about NATO and Putin's attempt to dismantle and render impotent NATO. And as you know, this is just the first step, just like it was, not the first step after Georgia, for example, in the invasion of the Crimea and occupation there. This is just an incremental step toward the dissolution of NATO. So anything we can do to support our NATO partners and allies, whether it's increased presence of American troops in those NATO countries to send a message that we are standing strong with NATO, I think would be positive.
Last question, Senator. I love the idea of reinvigorating Lend-Lease because it brings in history. It also clarifies, makes it easy to explain to people. There's some serious Democrats and independents like Angus King on defense. Bob Menendez occasionally is serious about defense. Have any of them agreed with you on Lend-Lease?
We are in conversations with a number of our Democratic friends and working this. We hope to have something that we can announce here within a week or so. Obviously, time is not on our side. We don't know what Putin's timetable is, but we do need to send a strong message over and above whatever message that the administration is sending, that the United States Congress, representing the American people, is going to stand with Ukraine and provide them what they need to defend themselves.
It's a great idea, John Cornyn. Thank you, Senator, for joining us and for promoting that in the Senate. Good luck to you in that cause. We'll keep our eye on it. It's really a great idea. Lend-Lease for this era, not just the last.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.